Further questions? We're ready to proceed, counsel, and you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honors. Counsel, I first must begin my argument by apologizing to all of you and to your staff. In reviewing the briefs this weekend, I realized that the automatic word pagination references didn't work, and so if you try to find anything from our table of contents or table of authorities, the page numbers are wrong, and I do apologize for the extra work or confusion this has caused you. My name is Frances Consiglia, and with the other counsel at table, we represent Mr. Ruff. Mr. Ruff is an injured worker, and injured workers such as Mr. Ruff do not expect much out of our system. They don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars to make campaign contributions. They don't have thousands of dollars to make political contributions. But what they got in this bargain when workers' compensation system was set up is that they are to have a system that is to be liberally construed in their favor, and that is to give them a speedy, just determination of the limited benefits to which they are entitled to. After the compensation system was created in this state, there was a huge amount of discussion and argument and litigation about the independent medical examinations. And what occurred prior to 1991 is everybody would hire their own expert and there would be fights back and forth. In 1991, the Colorado legislature amended the statute and created a system called Division Independent Medical Examination. And I don't know what is so complicated about understanding the word independent. It is in the statute and it is in the rule. And the reason the dime is so important is once that doctor makes his decision, it is given a presumption of accuracy that can only be overcome by clear and convincing evidence. And for all of you who have worked in the trial courts, you know that that is a very high standard. And in fact, Justice Bender in the Whiteside case in 2003, in reviewing another issue regarding indigent, said, indeed, the General Assembly created the dime within the statutory scheme because of the potential for the treating physician to be biased in favor of the employer and the insurance company. Because as you know, the treating physician for injured workers is picked by, in most instances, the employer and the insurance company. In spite of the fact that the dime is supposed to be independent and that the dime is to have no contact with the attorneys, Pinnacle and a group of doctors have entered into contracts whereby Pinnacle pays these doctors a steady, generous stream of income. And that has interfered with the very independence mandated by the statute that creates the dime. The arguments that Pinnacle and Dr. Ashberger have put forward to justify this taint and manipulation are the height of sophistry. Pinnacle and these doctors have agreed to do what you and I could not do. You would not sit in judgment on a case if you were getting a guaranteed stream of income. I don't care if it's 5 or 10 or 15 or 25% from a litigant in front of you. I would not represent a party if I was getting a stream of income from an adverse party. I just wouldn't do it, and I would be prohibited from doing it, and my independence wouldn't allow me to do it.
Ms. Consiglia, number one, is it true that the dime physician is selected, the three are submitted, and the lawyers for each side choose to, who will be eliminated?
That's correct, so that's, Your Honor.
In this case, that was done.
In this case,
and,
that was done.
Dr. Ashberger was the remaining person. Now, the gist of your complaint, as I read it in a nutshell, is that Pinnacle and Dr. Ashberger had a duty to tell Mr. Ruff and the other class plaintiffs of their relationship with Pinnacle. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Isn't that the heart of it? No.
Is the heart.
Tell me, what statutory provision or rule or regulation requires Pinnacle to make that duty of disclosure?
Your Honor, we would suggest to you that it is in the authorizing statute 843-502 that sets up the independent medical examinations. Does it specifically say you must say, tell us if you're hired by the other side? It does not. But statutes, as you know, can't come up with every issue, every case, every potential. And so that's why phrases like independent medical examination are used. And we believe the Workers' Compensation Rule 11, which is entitled Division Independent Medical Examination, also sets forth that the IME is to be conducted by someone who is independent. Now, it is true.
To the same extent, does that apply to Dr. Archberger too? Is that particular statutory provision and rule which suggests that he should have a duty to advise Mr. Ruff?
Yes, Your Honor. That is our position, that he should have had advised.
And now to the sixth claim for relief under your amended complaint. Class claim for negligence per se. What does negligence per se mean?
Your Honor, the theory behind that claim was that the doctor had a duty to disclose this kind of relationship under his own ethical guidelines. And when he did not, that created the negligence per se.
And so that if it should be determined by this panel, and I'm not suggesting it will be, but if it should be, that Pinnacle has no duty under the statute or rules, would Dr. Archberger have a separate duty?
We still think he had a separate duty, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Consiglia, I'd like to ask you another question about negligence per se. Now, that speaks in terms of a standard of care. So does that address only the standard of care in performing the dime, or is it more expansive as to what the standard of care would be?
We believe it would be more expansive, Your Honor, in terms of the background and his affiliations, and that under the ethical rule 10.03, which is cited in our brief and was cited below before the trial judge, that he had an obligation to disclose these matters.
Do you have any other authority in cases of negligence per se where a standard of care goes beyond just the performance of a duty and goes to an ethical standard?
We do not, and we really did not get to that issue because the judge essentially found that the rulings from the ALJs gave safe harbor to these physicians. And we believe that the trial judge did not understand the elements of bad faith, that as long as we have pled the elements of bad faith, which we did with respect to both Pinnacle and Dr. Archberger, that the judge had an obligation to let this case proceed because, as Savio says, as Brodeur has said as recently as 2007, the analysis that happens in a bad faith case is separate and apart and independent from what occurs in the workers' compensation proceeding. And it is our belief that if you remand this, we will be able to develop evidence that will show that Pinnacle and Dr. Archberger proceeded at their peril to taint this system in this fashion, and that is bad faith. It is unreasonable, and it is unfair.
But you, on paragraph 100 of your amended complaint, you note that the Colorado Statutes and Workers' Compensation Rule of Procedure 11 define the standard of care of Dr. Archberger and the defending class owed. Now, which is it? Is it the standard of care, meaning including the duty to disclose, or the standard of care that he made a proper evaluation and it looked at the structure and the fundamentals?
It is the standard of care to make the proper disclosure and to not take this assignment because he had a financial interest with a party in front of him.
Would all the independent medical examiners, and I think there's something in the briefs, or something like 2,800 of them?
Your Honor, it's our position that if Pinnacle has tainted the available supply of division independent medical examiners, that would be a ground to add a claim for punitive damages. That if they have tainted the panel of available doctors so that most of them are working for Pinnacle, then we think that's grounds to ask for punitive damages if you remand this below.
Is it because they're getting compensated for the independent medical examination, or is it because they're I think you refer to them as project directors or something like that.
Yes, Your Honor, it is because they are getting compensated not for conducting the independent medical examination, but they are getting compensated by Pinnacle for doing this other work for Pinnacle. And, you know, I would urge you to look at, because I want to reserve some of my time, the Massey versus Caperton Massey Cole case. Again, incredible to me that somebody had to go to the United States Supreme Court to conclude that if a judge in a contested election is the beneficiary of a $3 million contribution, he cannot sit on the case that decides to vacate the verdict of $50 million against Massey. And if you look at the language in that case, they certainly point out the various problems when you don't bite the hand that feeds you. When you're getting this kind of compensation or help from a litigant, you should not be able to decide a case involving that litigant. And I'm going to reserve the rest of my time because I'm sure there will be some other questions.
Good morning. I'm David DeMuro, and I represent Pinnacle Assurance. And I, through agreement with counsel, plan to take about 10 minutes and turn the last 5 minutes of time over to Mr. Drake, who represents Dr. Ashberger. Ms. Consiglia has begun with some arguments I think are a little better directed to the legislature than to this court. Let me bring us back, if I may, to the case before us. The threshold issue for us is what do you consider on a motion to dismiss? There's some debate in the briefs on this issue. Our position is that you do not consider the kind of conclusory legal allegations that you saw in their complaint, and that you should consider only their factual allegations plus the documents that we submitted with our motion to dismiss. And that's our position on that is based on Yadin. The Yadin case, a series of cases from this court in recent years that have recognized that documents referred to in the complaint may be cited in the motion to dismiss, even though they're not attached to the complaint, and that that action will not convert a motion to dismiss to a motion for summary judgment. So that's our threshold issue that we think it's important that the court.
Excuse me just one moment. Why don't you answer the same question I put to Mr. Consiglia? What statutory provision or rule or regulation provides that the Pinnacle or Dr. Ashberger should have a duty to disclose their financial and other arrangements with Pinnacle?
There are no such statutes, Mr. Justice.
What about the ones you mentioned?
Well, those merely say what she has referred to today and in her brief are merely general principles that general statute that says the division independent medical examiner must be independent, and that appears in the rule. We accept that. And the ALJ held a hearing on that issue, made a finding that Dr. Ashberger was independent, a finding that's worked its way up through this court and been affirmed as to actual conflict of interest, been affirmed by a panel of this court.
Well, how do you relate to her argument of Massey versus the Cap? I think it's Caperton.
Yes, Your Honor. I agree with
the same problem.
I agree with her on Caperton. I think the United States Supreme Court decided that correctly, but I submit that it has nothing to do with this situation. Judges there, it was, as you remember, a $3 million political contribution to an appellate judge, and thank God we don't have that system here. Judges occupy an extraordinarily different system than different place in our system than dime doctors do. Dime doctors, as this court knows, come in if there's a dispute between the parties, are appointed by the division after the selection process that you described earlier, Your Honor, and come in and make a determination as to whether the claimant is at MMI or has a certain impairment rating, that kind of thing, after a, you know, whatever it is, a half hour or an hour interview. They submit that, and then an ALJ ultimately decides whether whoever that dime doctor's position is against, whether that party can overcome by clear and convincing evidence the decision of the dime doctor. So it's, Caperton's completely, in my mind, completely different. The doctor does not occupy the same position. The physician is not exercising any kind of quasi-judicial authority. And in fact, again, panel of this court in the underlying case in Ruff specifically held the physicians don't occupy that position.
So, Mr. DeMuro, let me ask you this. Does the worker compensation rule and or the statute prohibit a doctor from performing a dime if that doctor has a conflict?
Well, there's language in the statute that says that it, in the rule, that says, really the rule is what I'm really focused on. The statute's pretty general and then says, let's promulgate rules, give the power to the director. So I'm focused more on the rule. The rule does provide for situations where the physician can be conflicted out, but the only examples given in the rule tend to be these examples of a physician giving an opinion on another physician in his or her practice. And so that certainly doesn't apply here. The issue that becomes interesting and is framed by the Benutius case and by your opinion in the underlying Ruff case is, what's the appropriate standard that we use on apparent conflicts of interest? Is it limited to that kind of example in the statute, or is it broader than that? So I think the answer to your question is, Your Honor, that there is some guidance from the rule, but it's not as, you know, specific as we might like. That's the only extent of the guidance, and that's why this case got remanded, I think, in your opinion, because your panel saw that issue a little differently. And when I say remanded, it's actually on cross petitions for cert right now.
And does that procedural posture have any effect on this case?
No, not from Pinnacle's standpoint. From Pinnacle's standpoint, taking the bad faith claim, Pinnacle can only be in bad faith if it acted unreasonably and knew it did, which is the two-step test under Savio. And there's ample case law we've cited in our brief to indicate there are a number of Colorado cases that say if an insurer is following the law and following Colorado statutes, then it is insulated from any possible liability from bad faith, even if the law is uncertain, some of the cases we've cited, FAM and REM and such. In this case, Pinnacle cannot have bad faith liability as a matter of law because it was following cases going back to the 2001 decision in Robertson, the ICAT, which is an ICAT decision, but something that the workers' comp community relies upon, and a series of cases that have continued on since then, including Ruff itself. So Pinnacle could not possibly have that liability. Now, it's possible, based on your remand order, assuming cert's denied and such, that the case could go back, and perhaps the ALJ will determine at that time that there is an apparent conflict of interest. That would change things in the workers' compensation case, but it would not affect the bad faith case because Pinnacle relied on the state of the law at the time, which is what the teachings of cases such as FAM and the Anderson case from the Tenth Circuit that relied on FAM. So my answer to that question is, Your Honor, it would make no difference in this case. So I urge the court to consider the ALJ opinions on the bad faith. I've essentially argued the our basic principles on our bad faith. Plaintiff's only theory is that Pinnacle on bad faith, the Pinnacle failed to make a disclosure that it should have made. There's nothing in the rule that requires it. There's nothing in the case law that requires it. Neither of the opinions that have been issued by this court in Benutius or Ruff have made such a requirement. It's simply not there at all. And to the contrary, the law has been, there is no conflict of interest. Ms. Concilia talked some about the dime system and about my client suggesting they've got some great conspiracy going. Please remember, you don't become a dime physician under our statute unless you're level two accredited. You have to go through the process in the state system to reach that level. And not surprisingly, those are the physicians who work on workers' compensation claimants. It is hardly surprising that those physicians then also perform dimes. My client happens to have, as everyone knows, a huge share of the market. So naturally, they're going to be all over the place. But these physicians, I do not take the cynical view that paying Dr. Ashberger $600 a month to come in half a day a month to be a physician advisor somehow taints him. He testified apparently very strongly at the hearing on this issue that he is independent, he takes no orders from Pinnacle. The ALJ found him to be credible and said that he was independent, and that issue on actual conflict of interest has been affirmed up through this court. So
However, excuse me.
Yeah, go ahead, Your Honor.
However, isn't the question in this case, rather than as it was in the underlying case, a question of whether there's an appearance of a conflict of interest by Dr. or with Dr. Ashberger?
Well, I would submit, Your Honor, that because this is the bad faith case, I would submit that we look to the law at the time Pinnacle took the actions that it took, which about in 2005 or 2006. And at that point in time, there's only one state of the law for my client to look at. There's nothing to indicate to my client that should have disclosed anything. There's nothing to indicate there is a conflict of interest, either actual or apparent. So my position is, you're right, it's a different principle, but my client should be insulated from any possible bad faith liability because of the state of law at the time.
Do you stand on your position, which I think you probably have, that Dr. Ashberger enjoys an immunity?
Well, Your Honor, I'll tell you what, I'm going to let Mr. Drake address that issue. As Pinnacle's counsel, I think I'll stay out of that fight if it's all right with Your Honor, and turn over the remainder of my time to Mr. Drake, who can respond to that. Thank you.
Well, the question has been passed to you, sir. What's your answer?
Well, good morning, Your Honor. It's Todd Drake on behalf of the FLE, Dr. Ashberger. To answer your question, Justice Rivera, there are immunity provisions that apply for Dr. Ashberger. They're very clear. They're set out both by Colorado statute and within the rule, and there's actually two separate bases for that immunity. The first is the one that was applied by the trial court, and that is that all members of the medical review panel, including IME physicians such as Dr. Ashberger, are immune from liability unless there is some showing that they were acting outside some reasonable good faith belief. This kind of goes back a little bit to Mr. DeMuro's point. There is no basis, first of all, there's no allegation that he didn't act in such a belief, and secondly, he couldn't have acted in some belief that he had a duty.
Does Dr. Ashberger have something in the nature of a judicial immunity as a result of?
He does not have judicial immunity, Your Honor, because he is not acting in a judicial role.
Same principle.
It is to some extent, in that the idea is, with all of these immunity provisions, has been we don't want workers who are upset with the result of their workers' compensation case to be able, they have avenues within the workers' compensation system to challenge whether there's an apparent conflict of interest, whether there's an appearance of a conflict of interest. That's what Mr. Ruff is doing within the workers' compensation system. What these immunity provisions have indicated, and what the intent of the legislature was to say, keep it over there in that system. We don't want IME doctors exposed to civil liability over these type of claims, because the concern is, if we're gonna open this up now to the civil trial courts and say, okay, every time a worker is upset about the result within the workers' compensation system, you're never gonna be able to find a physician to do IMEs. You're not going, all of these physicians, Dr. Ashberger and the 2,800 additional physicians that they tried to drag in as the class, they're simply gonna stop doing this work if they're going to be exposed to the possibility of litigation every time a worker's upset with the physician's determination. Going back to both your question, Justice Rivera, and yours, Judge Lichtenstein, there is no duty under Colorado law for a physician such as Dr. Ashberger to disclose any kind of conflict of interest, whether it be apparent, whether it be an appearance of a conflict of interest. That's very clear. There's nothing within either the statute or the Rule 11, as suggested by Ms. Concia, there's absolutely nothing within either of those that says you have a duty to disclose that. In fact, this court, and Judge Lichtenstein, you, in the companion case or the underlying case, you specifically rejected that argument and said, no, a physician such as Dr. Ashberger does not act in a judicial role or a quasi-judicial role where they have to go ahead and tell everybody about, oh, wait a second, you know, this isn't the trial court judge saying, hey, I'm notifying everyone, I have some prior relationship with this firm, or there's something here, I may have a financial interest, and so I'm going to disclose that there's a possible conflict of interest, I'm going to disclose that and then let the parties decide whether or not they want to use me or not. That's not the situation here. He has no duty. He's not in that quasi-judicial role, and he has no duty to go ahead and disclose any kind of financial arrangement.
Does he have an ethical duty to do so?
No, he does not. In fact, the ethical guidelines decided by the Mr. Ruff's counsel, the AMA guidelines, are actually differ from what's under Colorado law, because the AMA guidelines specifically say that an IME physician, such as Dr. Ashberger, has a physician-patient relationship with the person, the examinee. Colorado law is very clear that physician-patient relationship does not exist. So there is no ethical duty. It gets back to what Mr. Ruff's counsel would have this court suggest what the result would be, is that Dr. Ashberger, despite having done this work for 15, 20 years, has to somehow anticipate that there would be, at some point down the road, a ruling that there might be a conflict of interest from this, and so he needs to be out there at the forefront and telling everyone, hey, wait a second, I need to tell everyone, you know, Pinnacle pays me for this work. Well, this court's rejected. It's going back to the Martinez case, the court, and the Greenberg case. This court, in this Colorado Supreme Court, has consistently said the only duty an IME physician owes is a duty of reasonable care. They owe a duty to not injure that examinee. And that is the sole duty. Your question, Judge Lichtenstein, about whether the negligence per se extends beyond that duty, beyond just the standard of care, it's clear under Colorado law that's the only duty an IME physician owes. So the suggestion that a negligence per se could be it's negligent not to disclose that relationship, that's been rejected. They're the only negligence that could ever exist against an IME physician such as Dr. Ashberger is he comes in and he essentially intentionally injures Mr. Ruff. There's no allegation of that. There's no evidence of that. And we would therefore ask that this court affirm the decision of the lower court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you for your arguments, counsel. This matter. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I guess you weren't waiting with bated breath, but.
Ms. Katsuya, I'm sorry. You have 4 minutes and 40 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will try and use them judiciously. Independent means independent. I wouldn't hire an expert witness who was also working for the other side. And the Rule 11. H says that a physician is not supposed to evaluate an IME claimant if the appearance or an actual conflict of interest exists. And another panel of this court, in a decision written by Judge Lichtenstein, reversed the Ruff case to go down to examine the appearance of a conflict of interest, the appearance of an impropriety. In the Cole case, Judge Benjamin, it's hard to call him Justice Benjamin since he didn't seem to be meeting out much justice, analyzed himself and said he wasn't biased by the $3 million contribution. You know, money corrupts. And in this day and age, especially physicians, when they're trying to make a buck, 25% of their income is going to bias them. If you go back and look at Kane's ruling, he found that the doctor disqualified himself from handling Concentra cases because he got 60% of his income from Concentra. Concentra does a lot of the treating work. And so this is a physician who gets 85% of his income from the insurance industry. He is biased towards the insurance industry. It is the appearance of a conflict of interest. There is no case that says that this is okay. There is no statute that says this is okay. There is no regulation that says this is okay.
But
there is the Robertson
also,
case.
There's no rule, statute, or regulation which says it's not okay. Is that true?
That's right. But you told me to get here at 9 o'clock this morning for my oral argument. You didn't tell me to get up at 6:30 so I could be here on time. There's certain things that we just know we're supposed to do. And this one is just so wrong that these physicians think they can sit as an independent, essentially fact finder at the same time they are getting percentages of their income. I mean, if they got 100% of their income, would that disqualify them? What's the grade? Is it 20? Is it 65%?
Isn't this a question for the state legislature and the courts?
It is not. It is a question for the courts. These injured workers don't have a lot of money. Why should they have to lobby? Why should they have to go to ensure the independence when the statute says he's supposed to be independent. That is something that the court should do and find that, you know, and we should be allowed to discover and determine when and how Pinnacle decided they were going to set this up. They certainly set it up before the Robertson rule came into the Robertson case was decided. And by the way, the Robertson case addresses bias, not the conflict of or appearance of a conflict of interest. And so they don't have a safe harbor out there. They don't have a safe haven. They have proceeded at their risk to taint this system, and we should be allowed. And the trial judge was just wrong. We made allegations of bad faith, unreasonable behavior by both Pinnacle and Dr. Ashberger. And we should be allowed to discover how and why they set this up, what effect it has had on their bottom line, what effect it has had on the IMEs, and we should be allowed to proceed with our lawsuit below. There was no grounds for the judge to dismiss it at the time. It was a well-pled case, and what happens in the underlying workers' compensation case, as Savio, Brodeur, and Vaughn say, is almost irrelevant. Bad faith deals with unreasonable behavior, and this behavior strikes me in my gut. You know, some things are gray. Some things are black and white. This one's wrong. You wouldn't do it. You wouldn't do it, you wouldn't do it, I wouldn't do it, and you wouldn't have let a juror do it when you were sitting in the trial court. Mr. Ruff and others similarly situated are entitled to have a true independent medical exam by someone who owes not 1 cent, let alone 25% of his overhead payments to the insurance industry. And by the way, Your Honor, all three doctors on this panel were either SelectNet or medical advisors. So. All three doctors on the panel that was given to Mr. Ruff to strike from were SelectNet or medical advisors to Pinnacle. So we ask you to remand our case with instructions that it can proceed below. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And now, with the arguments fully completed, this matter will stand submitted and an opinion will issue in due course. Thank you. And the court is going to be in recess momentarily to reconstitute the panel. Thank you. And Leila.
The court will be in recess.